Hello and welcome everyone to our special focus 100 pounder meeting. Today is Wednesday, the 15th of May, and I am delighted to introduce Michelle BEH. Michelle came into OA in January of 2021. She is originally from Aberaeron in Wales, but she is now living in Norfolk with her hubby and her dog, Barbara. So, Michelle, we would love to hear your experience, strength, and hope.
Oh, thank you, Neil. Thank you, everybody, for inviting me today. Michelle, compulsive overeater, gratefully recovered just for today because that's all we've got. I, as Noel said, I came into OA in January the 5th, 2021. It was in the middle of lockdown, and I had to very quickly discover what Zoom was and how to work it. And I still haven't mastered it, but I am grateful to be here today, even though my computer died seconds before I came on. So I am on my phone, so bear with me. I came in because I'd put on 5 stone in 5 months. I was a mammoth eater, Olympian kind of quality eater. And this meeting was my first meeting, and this was where I found my first sponsor. So it's very, very close to my heart. So whenever I get asked to share, I always agree because I owe my whole recovery to this meeting, this first one that I came to, and also my sponsor. So I don't particularly like doing shares, I have to say, but I did promise my higher power that if I was fortunate enough to recover, then I would do everything I could to share that story because it's an important part of me staying well as well. But if it's okay, I'm going to tell you my journey through the steps because I haven't done it like that for ages and I thought it might be quite nice. So first of all, step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. My home growing up was a violent, chaotic, alcoholic home. My mum was quite cold and quite unfeeling, and my dad was domineering, forceful, loud, and I ate to hide feelings. Feelings were not welcome at all in our family. I had a little sister, and when my parents died, she remembered me protecting her from the worst of the bombs that went off in our house with no warning. She remembers me taking her behind the sofa, covering her ears, reading to her, singing to her, or drawing pictures. I don't remember any of this, but she clearly does. So becoming smaller, unseen, and unheard has always been a great tactic for me. Even now, I have to fight that. At 18, I left home and I left my sister alone in that misery, and I feel tremendous guilt for that, even though we've since talked about it since my parents have died. You know, there's no anonymity about that. And in fact, things got a little bit better for her once I'd left. But because that was, you know, the norm in our house, I've always sought relationships that replicated that. So quite aggressive, loud, lots of fear, quite violent, and certainly alcoholic. And if you can see behind me, and this is what recovery has brought me, I'm just going to move this slightly. There's my dad. And it's total forgiveness in recovery for what happened. My hometown, Aberaeron, on the other side is my mum. I said they were both alcoholics and both died from their disease. When I left home, I ate and ate and ate and ate because I was free. And it was literally off to the races because I wasn't under my mum's watchful eye. I had two beautiful birth daughters, and I adopted a son with autism, ADHD, and mental health challenges, and a mental disability. At my biggest, I was 21 stone three, and I wondered if that photo could be shown now, please, Anya, just so people can really see, you know, what I used to look like. It'll come up now. So I didn't do this. I'm not clever enough to do that. Rita did it for me. But you can see the big difference. You know, I literally ate until my skin almost burned. I was 21 stone three. My asthma was untreatable. Thank you, lovely. My asthma was untreatable due to my size, and my heart was enlarged. My kidney was failing, and I was retaining fluid in my legs and in my feet, and they became infected. My liver was struggling, fatty liver disease. I was certainly developing that as well. And I very nicely managed to cross three discs in my spine. They all herniated. And obviously, that really didn't help either. I also crushed my left hip to smithereens, where there was no joint anyway left, just under the weight. And I could barely walk. And actually, the bottom of my feet was so edematous, which is full of fluid, that they were round. They were like boat shaped. So I rocked when I walked, which didn't help my gait or my hip either. So I raided savings to buy a hip replacement because I was too young on the NHS. They wouldn't touch me to the barge pole, not because of my weight either. But my weight continued to rise. I thought, well, once I'd had an operation, I would chuck the crutches to the side and run down the street. But every step was agony because actually 9 weeks of doing less activity than I normally would enabled me to put on even more weight because I was bored trying to recover as well. So that wasn't the only thing. Every step was agony. Chub rub. A lot of people don't talk about this, but us 100 pounders, we know about chub rub. I blistered until I bled. The top of my legs literally burnt as I walked anywhere. And no amount of layers between them seemed to help. I got rashes in all the creases, under my breasts, in my groin. And I ate in secret. I hid food everywhere. I would buy it for the family, but put it in places in the back of the cupboard or put things in front of it that it couldn't be seen. And I just kidded myself, really, that, they didn't want them. So I may as well, I don't want to waste them because I was brought up, in that kind of environment. You don't waste your food, Michelle. You eat every single bit. And that carried on for many, many years. I ate from the bin, the floor, the freezer. I ate stuff that was out of date. I ate breakfast. I had something for 11s, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, mid-evening snack, and then a bedtime one for good measure, and anything in between. And then my husband, who was then my partner, suggested I looked at a fellowship. That helped people like me, and I couldn't understand what he meant because he was in a 12-step program. He was had been in a sober in AA for like 30, 33 years at that point, and I didn't know what he meant until we went to the seaside one day, and I'd got a big knapsack, and I went to my favourite stall, with all my alcoholic foods. I was so excited, nearly ran down there as much as I could. And I literally filled my bag. And I said to him, "Are you having anything?" He said, No, there's enough there." I said, "Okay, that's fine." So I paid for them and off we went. And when we got back to our accommodation, I tucked in. And he said, "Could I have some of those?" Now, compulsive overeaters don't share well, do they? I said, "What? You can't have any of mine. These are mine. I asked you when we were there, did you want anything? These are mine." And he laughed. And then he realized I was deadly serious. And that at that point did he realize that I really had a problem with my alcoholic foods. I was quite dishonest in my life at that time, so I lied. Everything's fine. Everything's okay. I'm okay. I'm great, thanks. How are you? I'm a normal size. I sought out people who were bigger than me. Always, all my friends were much bigger than me, and it wasn't easy to find people that were bigger than me, I can assure you. But that enabled me to pretend that I wasn't big. And you can see from the photographs, I was very big. I used to hide food, I used to hide my eating. I used to eat before I used to go out, eat when I went out, just pick up food and then eat when I got back. And I was so busy. And the busyness, literally, if you looked at my diaries from a few years ago, there wasn't a moment's breath between any of it because I didn't want to feel. If I stopped, I would be made to feel, and that was just too dangerous. I used to kid myself that I was in control, but actually, I was controlling. I was always herding the family together. I helped run an animal rescue. I was needed. I was a midwife. I was needed and really deep in the community. But I became controlling because I was completely out of control. My food was completely out of control. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, linking God with food was a challenge. I'd always believed that there was a God. My higher power is God. And I couldn't believe that my insanity around food and my life, because until I'd actually stepped into step one, I had no idea how insane my life was. So I decided to start quite simply just by saying thank you after each time I shopped for food, prepared food, ate food, washed up after it, just gently thank you, thank you. And eventually I forged what I couldn't see, that bridge between God and food. And I forged that. The simple thank yous. And I knew the prayers that I grew up with. My parents were both atheists, but I used to go to church as a child, and I learned all the prayers then. So I started remembering those and starting those, and then I added to them, praying for family health, happiness, ask for help for my disease, ask for, help with every part of my life, which was completely unmanageable. And I started to trust that too, that actually, I could be restored to sanity if I just trust and let God take over. And I didn't know what that looked like because I'd only ever known insanity and chaos. I'd always used God in the past a little bit like a genie in a lamp. A genie, you rub your lamp, you ask for something for yourself, and boom, it happens. And I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting what I wanted. It was more about control manipulation. At 14, I'm jumping back a little bit here. I was singing in the church choir. I went to church because I found happiness there. I found love. I used to watch other people a bit like a puppy, a German shepherd with one ear up and one down, thinking that, what are people doing? They're actually being nice to each other. People are being nice to me. Families are being nice to each other. Or I didn't get it. But I used to go, and at 14, when I was singing quite happily in the choir one day, this burst of light and heat came over me, and I could barely breathe. I had no idea what it was. I had a quick glance at every side of me, but everybody else was just singing. They didn't seem to be feeling what I felt. And at 14, I had no idea what it was. I was really scared, but I just felt a cloak of warmth and light and love and support and all of those feelings that I can't describe. And now, I mean, I can remember the tears falling, but I had no idea why. And that's what I can imagine was my spiritual awakening then. Yes. So, step three. Yeah, let's go to step three. I made a decision to turn my life, my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. So what would my life look like if I handed it over? Would I be able to choose things in my life? Could I choose this jumper or my red one? What did that look like? I had no idea what that meant. I'd always run the show through manipulation, coercion, persuasion, leadership, whatever. So this step has taken a bit of fine-tuning, really. I had to first concentrate on trusting God with my whole life. That took some time, and my interest at all times as well. And even though it might not feel like it, I knew he was working for me, even though it wasn't going the way that Michelle wanted. I had to trust that God had the bigger picture and that I only knew a tiny slice of the whole picture. And he wasn't asked, what do you need me to do today? That's what I started. Really simple. This program asks us to keep things simply. What do you need me to do today? Can you help me with whatever you need me to do? Can you present opportunity? Thank you, lovely. And why am I here? I didn't know why I was here, why I was in the fellowship. What did he want from me and how to navigate the day, And I used to ask God to please help me to be patient, understanding, kind, loving, tolerant, accepting, and being present for others, because it didn't come naturally for me. I believed I was quite a kind and gentle person, but actually, when I really looked at my behaviours, it was all about manipulation. And today, if I use the attributes throughout my day, I know that I won't cause harm to others, and I can live well and considerately. And certainly, so far it's working for me. I don't always get it right. I cock up constantly because I'm human and full of flaws, and that's okay. It's all a learning opportunity for me. I need reminding several times a day to hand my will back, because I can take it back in a heartbeat. So I do it. That third step prayer is just so easy to remember. So it's like a tug of a war sometimes. Sometimes God wins it and then I take it back. But as long as I remember, then I'm happy to hand it back, because everything goes pear-shaped when Michelle's in the driving seat. My pause button. Oh my goodness. If you've heard me share before, you know my pause button is the most important button that I have. I didn't even know I had one. And it's so useful because it allows me to breathe and not retaliate and not defend and not snap back like a serpent or a viper. I can pause, I can breathe, I can ask peace, quietly for help and just stop and then think before I do anything, before any unkind words come spilling out, because I don't want that for me anymore. I don't like it when it happens to me, and I don't want it to happen to anybody else. Step four. Oh, I dreaded step four. Made us searching and fearless, more inventory of ourselves. I dreaded it. I heard horror stories about it, and I faffed around for ages until my wonderful sponsor said, "Michelle, enough. Sit down, get on with the damn thing." So I did, and I was relieved that when I put it on paper, it wasn't as bad as my head told me it was. I was like, okay, I mean, it's pretty grim. There was some pretty grim stuff there. But what was underneath it all was fear of rejection, abandonment, and confrontation, which would go hand in hand with my childhood. And to know that, it was like, oh my God, of course. It was that amazing light bulb moment. I finally had answers, and my defects of character, of control, manipulation, persuasion, stubbornness, all of that was all fear-based. And I've done so many shameful things in the past. I had an affair while I was married once because I needed validity, I suppose, that I was wanted, and despite me getting bigger and getting older. And I've also, I've not always been present for my children growing up. The food seemed, more important, which is a shameful thing to say, but it was my whole life. That is my truth. And I'm making amends to them, living amends now, and life is so much better now. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I was afraid my sponsor would be ashamed. Ashamed of my actions and feel disgust for me. I thought that she would run for the hills and say, "That's it. I thought I knew you. I don't. I'm off." But she didn't. She really didn't. She was amazing. First of all, before I started, she assured me whatever I would tell her, she'd done it with bells on and worse. And then she told me something about herself. And then off I went. She didn't interrupt me once. She didn't ask me any questions. She just listened and loved. And I felt relief that that part of my life was dealt with, was over, and I could be free of my imperfections and poor choices and poor decision making and all of that. It was a real, real special time for me. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, was I ready? How would I be? Would anybody know me? Would I still look the same? Would I sound the same? I was really scared that I'd become boring. I mean, I'm a bit of a boring bird anyway, but I just thought I'd be much more boring than I am. And luckily, that hasn't happened because one of the worst defects I have of character is selfishness. And actually, it's selfishness that's kept me in the program. My stubbornness, my selfishness has kept me turning up, doing all the things that I need to do to stay well. So, even character defects can bring up some positive things, qualities and attributes. Step seven, I humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. Well, this was a huge, hugely emotional experience, asking God to take away my defects of character, leave me with some that were useful, obviously, because that's what the step seven prayer asks us to do. And I say it daily, and I mean it daily. I don't believe that my character defects have gone anywhere. I don't believe that they ever. Thank you, darling. I believe that they haven't gone anywhere. I don't believe they will go anywhere, but I believe that they become less powerful, and maybe the positive parts of me become more powerful than the defects. Step eight, I made a list of all persons I'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That was easy. Make a list, right? Make a list. Anybody can make a list. That's been my life, organizing my life with lists and diaries. But actually, the realization when I made that list that I have to deal with that list was a little bit scary. But I spoke to my sponsor, made a plan on how I'd make amends to those who had died and those I couldn't contact anymore, my friends and family. Step nine, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So I started with myself. I said sorry for abusing my body and pushing it to the limit. I sobbed in a little mirror as I sat and asked God to forgive me for not respecting the gift of life. He's given me this body, and I absolutely flogged it to death. I overate it, I starved it, I overworked it because I could overexercise. At one point, I would barely eat a meal without being able to guarantee that I could exercise enough to get rid of what I'd eaten. My whole life was mad. I am nuts around food, basically. And at that moment, I felt a huge shame that I'd damaged. It's like I tried to imagine my great aunt giving me this beautiful trinket box, and I wouldn't look after it, and I would let it get rusty, and the hinges would break, and I would be really upset that I'd done that. But obviously, my higher power is all forgiving, so I asked for help to repair that damage that I'd done to myself, and teach me how to heal it, treat it with respect, and be grateful for it. I sent letters, I sent videos, I spoke face to face, I apologized for my actions and my choices. And what I didn't expect was a flow of love that came back from every single person, even those that maybe I didn't think I'd get anything from, or not that I'm doing it from that. That isn't the point. I do this for me, and also to set the record straight and to admit my defaults. And it was hugely humbling to do that, to be so honest. And that was a huge change in everything. I was reminded then how important honesty was for all of us, particularly while we're in this program. Without it, we have nothing. And I was allowed to be vulnerable, which also freed them to be vulnerable with me. And that was amazing. And there was a new relationships building up, new way forward with the relationships in my family and friends. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I cannot afford to carry resentments, qualms, and fears anymore. They weigh me down and disturb my serenity. My default today is serene, peaceful. That's my default. If I'm not there, I have to scrabble back to find it in any way I can. And step 10 inventories really helped me with that, along with prayer and meditation and that wonderful pause button. It's essential to my recovery. It keeps me sane, grounded, and abstinent. I don't always get it right. Some are really stubborn. So it takes me a few days to really look at things again and say, hey, I missed that. How could I miss that? But I'm human. Step 11, my favorite step. So, step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Well, I pray every morning and evening and several times throughout the day. I give gratitude all day long. I have so much to be grateful for. I'm not suggesting for a moment that when you are recovered as such or in recovery, life is magical and the unicorns are just trundling down the main street as you walk beside them. It doesn't happen. I get huge life events. I get vultures circling all the time, ready to pick bits off. But the fact is, I don't eat on it and I don't have to rely on food anymore because I have a higher power that helps me, that holds me until I can see what I need to do, if anything. Sometimes it's nothing. And I'm now open to feeling things, sensing things. My hearing is more acute since I don't eat. I mean, how is that? I've been a nurse and a midwife and in medicine for many years. There is no link, but there really is a link. I can hear, I can see, everything tastes better. And I notice things that I didn't before. I notice the bird sound. I notice the green leaves, the different greens on one bush. I notice, the ebb and the flow of the tide when I go paddling with Barbara, my dog, and it's good. It's really good.
Wonderful.
Thank you, lovely. So with regards to my meditation, I'm really pants at meditation. I'm going to speed up now. I'm really pants at it. I do my best and good is good enough. I can only do a few minutes at a time, but I can do it through many ways. It doesn't have to be just sit there in a dark room with a candle. I can do it through music. I can do it through quiet. I can do it through guided meditation. The most important thing is that I keep trying and I'm doing the best I can with that. And I do a daily meeting every morning to revisit my step one, two, and three, and remind myself, hey, Michelle, you've woken up a compulsive overeater again. Oh, shucks. But I need to take my medication, which is my program. I'm powerless. I'm compulsive overeater. Always and will be. I'm powerless. I can't. God can. So I better let him do it because actually, I've written it down here somewhere. Thanks, Michelle, but I don't need your help today. Okay, so I do service, connection with others. I try and outreach at least two or three times a day. I participate in meetings when I can, and I do pray and meditate every single day, even if I find it hard. And step 12, having had a spiritual recovery as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm trying hard to promote recovery to other compulsive overeaters. I ask God to help me shine and glow recovery so people can see and feel it and ask me how I got it. Because that's important. I'm not special. I am not special. If I thought for a moment I'd be here, almost 3.5 years later, still keeping away from my alcoholic foods, I'd have laughed you down the street. I am not capable of anything like that, but I know someone who does and can. And there is a solution, and it is in this fellowship. There is nowhere else to go for me. I've done it all. I've worn rubber hot pants to sweat it out. I've done every liquid diet in the history of man, the weigh and pays, any supplements I've had, these blooming bands, you name it. Had it. Didn't work, but this does. God works for me. I'm really grateful for that. I'm a sponsee. I have a wonderful sponsor. I'm a sponsor. And I do everything that I can to stay well. I journal every day. Those of you who know me, I have a journal, but every day, I mean, okay, it might be quite repetitive, but it's important because I grew up in a home without any emotional vocabulary, so I've had to learn it in adulthood. And I'm 57 now, and I'm still learning that. My action plan is, my food plan is very, very simple. It's robust. I have alcoholic foods that I can't eat. Thank you, lovely. And I can't eat them. Thank you. I can't eat them ever. Okay. I have food behaviors that I can't adhere to. I must eat three times a day, with a beginning and an end. I must go to a meeting most days if I can. And if I can't, I must journal. I must do my daily readings. I must pray and meditate. And that's it. Keep it simple. And I feel that I'm disciplined now much more than I ever was because that's a gift. It's a gift back to God for giving me this body, for all the abuse that I've done to it in the past. And now I've got a chance of treating it with respect. So I think I'll stop there. And I hope that was helpful to at least maybe one or two of you in here. Thank you for allowing me to share. Bless you all.